Continuing now with hour number two of this weekend's two-hour installment of A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and of course the host of the program is Carol Marks, one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism. Let's kick this hour off with Carol Marks in conversation with Harlow Giles Unger. He's a former distinguished visiting fellow at Mount Vernon and is a highly acclaimed historian. He's going to talk to Carol about his latest book titled John Marshall, the Chief Justice Who Saved the Nation, published by DeCapo Press.
Now, when you think of a Supreme Court justice, you usually don't think of him or her as being someone who's gregarious and fun-loving, yet forceful. But isn't that just what your research showed were the traits that Chief Justice John Marshall really had with his family and his intimate friends?
Absolutely, and not just with his most intimate friends, with all the other justices on the Supreme Court. Indeed, Thomas Jefferson, who hated John Marshall and had totally opposite political views, tried to pack the Supreme Court with justices whose politics were the same as Jefferson's. And lo and behold, once they got on the Supreme Court, Marshall was so charming and so convincing and such a learned person in terms of the law that he soon had them all voting unanimously with him. He had this uncanny charm and ability to convince other people that his views were theirs.
John Marshall went on to become a lawyer, and he had a very successful practice. So what got him interested in politics then?
Well, he really wasn't interested in politics. He loved practicing law. And indeed, he was such a successful lawyer. He won a few cases alongside Patrick Henry. They teamed up in several very, very important cases. But he loved the law, and when he was appointed temporarily as acting prosecuting attorney for the state of Virginia at one point, and when he was offered the job on a permanent basis, he refused. He went back to the law. What he didn't like about being a prosecuting attorney was that you had to prosecute and try to convict the defendant regardless of the justice of the case. You had to enforce the law regardless of the justice of the particular case or the justice of that law itself. Remember, a law is a catch-all, and sometimes it just doesn't apply in some cases. And he didn't like that, so he went back to practicing law. And it was only when the Constitution came up for ratification that he became more involved in politics, because the nation had deteriorated into chaotic conditions, anarchic conditions. After we won our independence, we were not the United States of America. We were 13 independent nations, in effect. They were loosely tied to each other through a confederation agreement, which created a confederation Congress, but that was just a place where they could all meet and discuss common problems. It had no powers. And as a result, little by little, from the Day of Independence in 1783, for the next 5 or 6 years, the nation deteriorated into anarchy, with a number of the states at war with each other, fighting each other on battlefields.
And you almost have the same thing that continues sometimes today, you know,
yes,
with
exactly.
States.
Well, it was just, it became like Europe was in
yes.
those days.
Yes.
And fortunately, George Washington and James Madison and a few other Virginia leaders pulled everybody together at a convention in Philadelphia, which became the Constitutional Convention, to set up a central government with more powers to keep the states in line. And John Marshall was a member of the... Each state had to call a convention to ratify the Constitution, and John Marshall was a delegate at the ratification convention, and it was there that he really became more and more of a federalist, as they were called, and got interested in government itself.
What I found, you know, fascinating is eventually he became the Supreme Court Justice John Marshall, and almost immediately that chaos that you were talking about burst forth again. And again, it was all about, you know, who's got the power, the states or the federal government. So he was so important in two of the cases that really set the precedent, which, of course, people are still attacking. But so can you tell us why the two cases were so important, the Marbury versus Madison and the McCulloch versus Maryland case?
Yes, indeed. Those two cases came really long after he was appointed Chief Justice. What happened first was that everything was in good order here during the Washington years, and it was after Washington died in 1899 that other founding fathers turned on each other for power and to try to inherit Washington's mantle. Well, no one could be George Washington. George Washington commanded people to do things, and they did it. No one had that power, and John Adams, who had been George Washington's vice president, became president and lost his bid for re-election in 1899, and Thomas Jefferson then came to power and tried to extend his powers into every area of American life. And at the time, there was the Supreme Court was not an equal third branch of government. The Supreme Court in the Constitution was simply an appeals court to hear appeals from lower federal court decisions, and that's it. John Marshall and his Supreme Court in 1803 had a case called Marbury v. Madison, and it was in that case that they wrote a decision that was totally unconstitutional. They assumed the power of the Supreme Court to rule a federal law unconstitutional and therefore null and void, or as they said in those days, no law. Well, the Constitution didn't give them the right to do that, and Marbury v. Madison itself was unconstitutional, and Jefferson reacted by packing the Supreme Court. He added two more justices to the court, and then got Congress to pass a new law which dispersed the Supreme Court. For 2 years, they never even got a chance to meet. They were sent out onto what was called the circuit courts, riding the circuits, and Jefferson hoped they would be separated so far that they would never come together again. Well, they did come together again, and in Marbury v. Madison, they exercised this new power that they invented of judicial review, declaring a law unconstitutional and declaring the President of the United States subject to the law like every other citizen, that he could not violate the law. Well, by the time that the ruling went into effect, Jefferson was out of power. Madison had come into power. Madison was a very weak president, and he did not dispute the decision. It just sat there and became part of the law of the land, in a sense.
And you know what I found amazing, though, was I never realized that in Jefferson and the whole thing about revising the whole judiciary system, they were thinking about cutting the number of Supreme Court justices from 6 to 5. And, you know, it just, you could just imagine, you know, what a difference that might have made if that had gone into effect.
Absolutely. Well, Congress does, under the Constitution, have the right to increase or decrease the number of judges on the Supreme Court. So that was not unconstitutional on the part of Jefferson. What was unconstitutional under Marbury v. Madison was his refusal to allow appointees of a previous administration to take their posts. Marbury was a low-level justice of the peace who had been appointed by John Adams in the wee hours, the last hours of the Adams administration. And He had signed the appointment. The appointment had the stamp of the seal of the United States, and it lay on the Secretary of State's desk. The outgoing Secretary of State at the time was John Marshall. In comes Madison as Secretary of State under Jefferson, and Madison asked what to do with this appointment of this guy, this justice of the peace from an opposing party. Jefferson said, ignore it, tear it up, we'll appoint somebody else. And that was the case which Marshall, then as Supreme Court Justice, ruled him out of order, said that Jefferson had acted unconstitutionally, had usurped powers not given to the president, that he could not violate the law any more than any other citizen. So it was a huge decision. Jefferson opposed it terribly, so did Congress, and really they dispersed the Supreme Court. And it wasn't until the Supreme Court came back into session several years later, and with Madison in power, that this case was really exercised as the law of the land.
Harlow Giles Unger, in conversation with Carol Marx. His book is titled John Marshall, the Chief Justice Who Saved the Nation, published by DeCapo Press. I'm Michael Harrison. A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, continues in just a moment.
Did you know? An estimated 16 million Americans suffer from a chronic inflammatory facial condition called rosacea, and most of them don't know it? Often mistaken for acne, there are many signs and symptoms of rosacea besides facial redness, pimples, and visible blood vessels. Other symptoms may include burning, stinging, swelling, and even enlargement of the nose. Rosacea can also affect the eyes, causing a bloodshot appearance and irritation that could lead to vision loss. Any one of these signs and symptoms can mean rosacea, and without medical help, it can become increasingly severe and wreak havoc on your personal and professional life. Rosacea typically appears any time after age 30. So if you experience any sign of rosacea, see a dermatologist for diagnosis and treatment. Or for more information, visit the National Rosacea Society at rosacea.org.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best, so take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
Engine.
Check.
Thrusters.
Check.
Fuel.
Check.
Computers.
Check.
Social Security.
No check, go direct.
That's right, Patty. A few weeks ago, I went online to godirect.org to sign up for direct deposit. It's easy to do, and I got my cash at warp speed.
Wow, it's fast and easy. I'll sign up right now to make sure I'm prepared for our next mission.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and here again is the host of the program, Carol Marx, in conversation now with Ann T. Finney. Ann T. Finney is an elementary school teacher, and she's going to talk to Carol about her memoir, Finding My Way to Moose River Farm, Living with Animals in the Adirondacks. It's published by North Country Books.
And before we talk about your family of animals on your Moose River Farm, which includes 11 horses, 4 dogs, 3 goats, 2 donkeys, an iguana, and a pot-bellied pig, let's talk about how you got to where you are now, you know, fulfilling that dream of having a life full of animals. Now, it started, you write, when you came down with what you call horsitis. So how old were you, and what were you doing about horses long before you ever owned one?
Well, I don't remember a time in my life that I didn't absolutely love animals and wasn't attracted to them. And so, therefore, about the time that I was maybe 4 or 5 years old, I saw horses for the first time. And I just had an instant connection and love of them. And then at age 5, I got to ride one. And that was the beginning of what I consider is an addiction. I have to have my fix every day of my horses. So from that point on, I took riding lessons and I learned everything that I could about them. I spent time in any barn or stable that I possibly could. And I didn't just love to ride them. I really loved to care for them and to be part of the decision making about their lives and their health and their care. But my parents were unable to afford a horse, and they said no to me when I asked for a horse, which was probably every day from the time I was 6 years old till I was 16. And finally at 16, my father and I became partners, financial partners, in a wonderful horse that I write about in the book. Her name was Summer's Promise. And she wasn't an expensive horse. I didn't mean to imply that, but I could finally afford at least half the care of a horse, and my father helped me with the rest.
And you eventually got to the beautiful Adirondacks where you are now, and you were also able to meet your soulmate, Rod. And how's he helped you in your dream of constructing, you know, it's a perfect horse farm and home, and even lately, I guess you've been able to have an indoor riding range.
My husband is the sole reason why I am living my dream. He has built actually two farms. We began our marriage on a little tiny piece of property up in Inlet, New York, on a lake that's also in the Adirondacks, about 10 miles from here. And I had four horses there. He built me a beautiful four-stall barn and put up fences, cleared land so that I could have a little riding ring and some turnout space for my horses. He just went over the top. My original dream was to have a farm that I could see from my kitchen window. I wanted to be able to look out and see my horses and see my animals, and he built that for me. But that pales in comparison to Moose River Farm, where we live now. We lived here now for 10 years. He actually cleared the land. We now own 77 acres. He cleared about 4 acres of it, milled the wood, built the barn, built the house, pretty much by himself. He had a little bit of help, but mostly he has done all the work himself. And right now where I'm sitting in my house, I'm looking out at my beautiful pastures and my barn and my indoor riding ring, which came a few years later. So my husband Rod is just a huge part, a piece in the puzzle that got me to this incredible life.
And you're very lucky. Now, getting back to being an elementary school teacher, I loved in the book when you talked about the fact that you brought animals into the classroom and exposed them to, you know, animals that were not necessarily cute and cuddly. And you had two iguanas, Rosemary and Spike. And, you know, when I read your story, I realized how lucky I was not to have been born a female iguana, because yours produced 62 eggs. My goodness. What was that like?
Well, that was quite an experience. Of course, we didn't know a whole lot about iguanas, and so we were learning as Rosemary was figuring out what her body was doing. Yes, I guess she was about 3 years old at the time, and her body filled up with about 62 eggs. She became lethargic. We knew that she was gravid. We knew that they were in there and that this was sort of a natural process. She and her mate, Spike, had demonstrated some breeding behavior earlier that year that the students witnessed and learned all about. And finally, by, I guess, the end of May, she stopped eating. She clearly was so uncomfortable, and we were so concerned that we had an x-ray taken of her body. Our local veterinarian at the time was desperately curious to see what was going on in there. So we have a wonderful picture of these eggs. They just packed her torso. And finally, about the first week of June, she started to lay them, and it took her about 3 days to get rid of all of them. And, of course, when they finally came out, she was terribly thin because she hadn't eaten for several weeks. But she was clearly more comfortable, and she came back into full health. And I still have Rosemary. Spike is gone. He passed away at about age 15 or 16. But Rosemary is downstairs in my living room right now. She's 21 years old.
Wow. And I also love the fact that you had an indoor pet that you got when he was 11 weeks old. I'm talking about the pot-bellied piglet. And named Noah, and you said that pigs are among the most successful animals on the planet. So what can we learn from these pigs about survival? And wasn't it difficult to have a pot-bellied pig in the house as a pet?
Yes and yes. That's another pig that we, or excuse me, another pet that we sort of learned about as we went. We did a lot of research before we took him in. He was a rescue situation. Pigs are very, very intelligent. They have been able to survive on just about every continent, which is a good indication of their intelligence because they're able to adapt. In fact, there are pockets of feral pigs all over the country that are wreaking havoc on the environment because they are so easily able to adapt. We had Noah for 10 years. He lived in our house. He was an adorable little tiny 11-week-old baby that I held in my arms and sat on the sofa with in the evening and cuddled. And he grew into a 250-pound
wow.
pig who still wanted to cuddle on the couch. And he was a very interesting personality. He wasn't quite like a dog. I think dogs are more affectionate and really love your attention. But he taught me so many lessons in just the way that he strategized. He would figure out ways of acquiring food. He was all about food. He would do anything for food, but it was always not to make me happy, but to make him happy. Very interesting. He is gone, but we have now a female potbelly pig named Fiona, who's 8 years old, and she lives in our house. Noah lived in our house. He slept up in our bedroom. He climbed the stairs every evening and went to bed on the floor in our bedroom. She doesn't have the run of the house. She has her own room off of the laundry room downstairs. So if she's in the house, she has to be in her room.
That's Ann T. Finney in conversation with Carol Marks. Her book is titled Finding My Way to Moose River Farm, Living with Animals in the Adirondacks. It's published by North Country Books. You want some more information? Go to mooseriverfarm.com. A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, continues right here in just a moment.
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
They're not movie tough guys, just ordinary people doing something extraordinary. They're all signed up on matchingdonors.com, willing to donate their kidney to anyone who needs it. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. Matchingdonors.com improves those odds by finding living, altruistic donors for patients desperately needing transplants. Go to matchingdonors.com and meet some extraordinary people. That's matchingdonors.com.
Want to stay informed when there are changes to Social Security? Subscribe to receive automatic email updates on popular Social Security webpages with the click of a button. Just visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. More than 1 million people already receive updates to the pages they're most interested in. You can too. Look for the red envelope followed by a link that says Get Email Updates. To learn more, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. Social Security delivers.
This is a Driving Today Minute. Even though high gasoline prices have moderated somewhat, they're still quite high. It just makes good sense to do what you can do to reduce your fuel costs. The Alliance to Save Energy suggests a few easy things you can do.
Keep your car properly tuned up and change the air filter regularly, both to save gas and protect your engine. Curtail aggressive driving, according to the U.S. Department of Energy. Speeding, rapid acceleration, and hard braking waste gas and curb mileage by as much as 33% at highway speeds.
So nix the jackrabbit starts and opt instead for slow acceleration from a dead stop. Slow down. The DOE says each mile per hour you drive over 60 is like paying an extra 10 cents per gallon. Inflate tires to the proper pressure. This will increase fuel economy and make tires safer and extend their life.
This Driving Today Minute is brought to you by Bridgestone Firestone Tires. You can get more information like this at drivingtoday.com or by visiting our partners such as autobytel.com, motorsportsforum.com, and more.
You're listening to A Touch of Gray.
Check out our website at atouchofgray.com. We spell gray with an E. That's atouchofgray.com. We spell gray with an E.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best, so take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only.
Engines.
Check.
Thrusters.
Check.
Fuel.
Check.
Computers.
Check.
Social Security.
No check, go direct.
That's right, Patty. A few weeks ago, I went online to godirect.org to sign up for direct deposit. It's easy to do, and I got my cash at warp speed.
Wow, it's fast and easy. I'll sign up right now to make sure I'm prepared for our next mission.
Carol Marks is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism in our society. Her fabulous new book, Modern Aging, A Guide for Seasoned Citizens to Achieve Health, Happiness, and Purpose, published by Talkers Books, is a major breakthrough in providing a maturing population with vital information and inspiration to live better and more productive lives. Carol Marks offers practical strategies for juggling work, romance, and navigating the healthcare system. She is a guide through the maze of grandparenting, technology, travel, and retirement, as well as facing the sandwich generation struggle of supporting adult children and elderly parents. Modern Aging by Carol Marks is available now at www.talkersbooks.com. That's www.talkersbooks.com.
If you plan to apply for Social Security disability benefits, there are things you can do to help speed up the usual 3 to 5 month wait for a decision. The more information you provide up front, the less time it'll take us to obtain the needed evidence, and the faster the decision can be made. Information like medical records or documentation, the names, addresses, and phone numbers of your doctors and medical facilities, information on your past employment, and more. To be prepared, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/disability and select Disability Starter Kits.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair. And for the rest of the way, we're going to be joined by our senior correspondent, Richard Neer, who just moments from now will be speaking with Dr. Robert Rosenberg. Dr. Robert Rosenberg is the medical director for the Sleep Disorders Center of Prescott Valley, Prescott Valley, Arizona, and he's going to talk about his new book, Sleep Soundly Every Day, Feel Fantastic Every Day. I think it should be Sleep Soundly Every Night, but it's called Sleep Soundly Every Day, Feel Fantastic Every Day, A Doctor's Guide to Solving Your Sleep Problems, and it's published by Demos Health. And the snorer, the snorer, an occasional schnorer.
Schnorer, I knew that was coming.
Richard Neer is in the background. Richard, I don't want you to give away any of the secrets that Dr. Rosenberg shares with you, because I know that you've already conducted this interview and you're awake, so at least it must have been interesting. But isn't it amazing when you get to know people, you talk to them, what a large percentage of the population has some kind of issue sleeping at night?
Well, we all have heard from our youth that you sleep 8 hours at night, you go to bed at a certain time, you wake up at a certain time, and that's it. And, of course, we know that's a myth, because I don't know anybody who does that, but that's the ideal. And you know, Michael, I mean, you work really hard and you stay up late and get up early. Mm-hmm. When you don't get your sleep, you're a different person. You can be cranky. Little things that normally would just not bother you at all get under your skin and bother you. And one doctor, this particular doctor didn't say this, but another doctor that I read recently said that it can, in fact, somebody that we interviewed on the show said that if you miss two nights of sleep consecutively, that it can affect you for years. How about that?
Well, I guess it could be true. I don't know what I believe anymore about anything having to do with sleep. Because, you know, there are these rules. You know, you have to have 8 hours of sleep a night. Well, I don't know anybody who gets 8 hours of sleep a night. Even when I was a kid, I didn't. I used to stay up late as a kid. I was one of those kids that didn't want to go to sleep, and my parents didn't make me. So I always wound up falling asleep, you know, on the couch or falling asleep on the floor. I didn't want to go to bed. I didn't want to miss anything, you know. And one of the things I find, I sleep an average of 5-6 hours a night sleep, maybe 7 if I'm lucky. So when you say you're not the same after you don't get a night's sleep, I'm not the same if I do. I'm used to being tired or grumpy. But there were people though that have issues about sleep, that they can't sleep if there's noise, they can't sleep if there's light, they have sleep apnea, which is a pretty serious thing. They snore, their partner snores. They worry and they lie awake, so they take sleeping pills and they can't get up. It's just...
Well, let me tip off one little thing that he says in this interview, which I think is a bit shocking, and that's that maybe husbands and wives should sleep in separate rooms.
A lot of them do.
What do you think about that?
A lot of them do.
And it has nothing to do with their relationship or their amorous life. It has to do with getting a good night's sleep.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely, and I'll just point out to you from conversations I've had with a number of people, a lot of very happily married couples sleep separately. And when they're on the road and they have to go in a hotel together or whatever, it's actually, all right, well, we won't get a great night's sleep, but whatever. Okay, interesting stuff. We look forward to your conversation with Dr. Robert Rosenberg. Even more interesting, well, to me at least, because I like to read the books of people I know. You've written a new book. Everybody knows that you're a very, very literary person, and we're going to talk all about it after the Rosenberg conversation, Richard Neer's new book, A Thriller, and we'll discuss it and how you can get it when A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, continues.
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
They're not movie tough guys, just ordinary people doing something extraordinary. They're all signed up on MatchingDonors.com, willing to donate their kidney to anyone who needs it. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. MatchingDonors.com improves those odds by finding living, altruistic donors for patients desperately needing transplants. Go to MatchingDonors.com and meet some extraordinary people. That's MatchingDonors.com.
Want to stay informed when there are changes to Social Security? Subscribe to receive automatic email updates on popular Social Security web pages with the click of a button. Just visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. More than 1 million people already receive updates to the pages they're most interested in. You can too. Look for the red envelope followed by a link that says Get Email Updates. To learn more, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. Social Security delivers.
Hi, this is Morgan Freeman. Has anyone ever said, you are the picture of health? You look healthy, you feel fine, but that may not be the full picture. Colorectal cancer is the second leading cancer killer of men and women over 50. Since it doesn't always cause symptoms, you may not know you have it. The only way to know is by getting screened. Screening can find precancerous polyps so they can be removed before they turn into cancer. This is one cancer you can prevent. Plus, screening can find colorectal cancer at an early stage when the chance for a full recovery is very high. Talk with your doctor and get tested for colorectal cancer. Medicare and many insurance plans help pay for screening. Get screened. Make sure you are the picture of health.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best, so take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only.
Continuing now with The Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. As promised, here's our senior correspondent Richard Muir in conversation with Dr. Robert Rosenberg. He's the medical director of the Sleep Disorder Center of Prescott Valley, Arizona, and he's going to talk to Richard about his new book titled Sleep Soundly Every Day, Feel Fantastic Every Day, A Doctor's Guide to Solving Your Sleep Problems, published by Demos Health.
Boy, doctor, right in that title is something I think we all aspire to, and your book is certainly helpful in doing that. When do bad sleep habits start? Can they start in childhood and follow you through your adult life?
Exactly. Very much so. The many cases of childhood problems, bedtime resistance, what we call a sleep onset association, where the child begins to need a parent or someone in the bedroom with him in order to fall asleep, and limit-setting behavior, where the child basically protests, comes out and takes numerous curtain calls. But if this goes unheeded and you don't do anything, if the parent is not get forceful in many ways, the studies have shown that a good 20% of these kids, and 30% overall, have sleep problems, but 20% will go on to continue to have insomnia and sleep issues into teenaging, then into adult life, and so it can follow them the rest of their life. It can throw the circadian cycle off at a very young age, and that's probably the basis for a lot of it. We may be turning children into night owls or allowing them to become night owls who wouldn't have become night owls.
Well, that's the key, allowing. And I think it's pretty normal every kid. I don't want to go to bed. I want to stay up. I want to do this. And,
right.
And you get that with kids. What can a parent do if the kid just resists and says, no, I'm staying up and won't go to sleep? What do you
do? That's a great question. I just wrote a column for Everyday Health on just that called Tough Love. The National Sleep Foundation, first of all, your listeners should know, came up with a report in 2014 that showed that parents who enforced, and I don't mean Gestapo-like, but who enforced a bedtime, who enforced limits on time when you can drink caffeine, and who enforced the use of electronics in the bedroom, their children slept on an average 80% of an hour, or about an hour more than did children whose parents did not enforce rules. They also found that children whose parents set a good example didn't have the television on in the bedroom, didn't bring electronics, iPads, and iPhones into the bedroom. A significant group of those kids modeled their parents and did not do those things. So what a parent has to do really is the television's got to be off, and I think out of the bedroom, period, but it has to be off an hour before bedtime. Electronic videos, iPads, cell phones, got to be out of the bedroom at least an hour, and actually shouldn't be in the bedroom at all. The bedroom should become a restricted space. And, of course, no caffeine, certainly after midday. Certain parents need to be aware that even substances such as dark chocolate contain a great deal of caffeine.
Boy, I think you really hit it on the head with those phones, because I'll tell you, these kids with phones now, especially the smartphones, and they
right.
can text and they can watch videos and they can go back and forth. And it's so hard for a parent to make sure that you don't smuggle it into the room, because you can think
right.
that they're in the dark
blue
and they're
light.
Sleeping.
The parents
yeah.
need to understand it's the blue light that's given off from the phones, the iPads, and the televisions that shuts down the production of melatonin, which is the sleep-promoting hormone that the child's brain is trying to make at about 8 to 9 o'clock at night, or 7 o'clock in the case of younger children. So it's extraordinarily important. If you don't, you end up with children who are sleeping only 6 to 7 hours. They're depressed, they're fatigued. They have a higher rate of suicide as they get older, and they don't do well in school. And a key thing is, if a child has to sleep in an extra couple of hours on weekends, then you probably have a child who's not getting enough sleep on weekdays.
And that is pretty common. Well, let's shift this to adults, because I will admit I have a bad habit. I love to fall asleep with the TV on, watching a show, and I'll drift off, and my wife will say, okay, you're sleeping, turn it off. And I'm still watching it. And obviously that's not a good thing. The TV should be off, right?
No, you're right. You may do okay, Richard, but by and large, people, another study recently showed that people who leave the TV on during the night have more trouble not only falling asleep, but tend to wake up and have a poorer quality sleep when followed over a period of time than do people who turn the television off considerably before bedtime. We think that the blue light of the television in some cases may be able to penetrate even a closed eyelid.
Yeah, well, I think that tends to be true. There's no doubt about that. What about nights, and these are seemingly random. I don't know why it is. You wake up at 3 in the morning. You're wide awake. The TV's off. You can't go back to sleep. And you go, God, I got to get up at 6. I need to sleep. Right. What are some of the things that you can do to go back to sleep when you wake up like that?
Well, if it's a common thing, if it's become chronic, and that's called sleep maintenance insomnia, and if it's characterized by early morning awakenings, the first thing that you can do before you seek a health care provider, which you may have to do, is to get out of bed after 15 or 20 minutes. If you're wide awake, go into another room. This technique is called stimulus control, and we talk about it in the book, and it is a key cognitive behavioral treatment for insomnia. Go do something kind of boring, read a magazine, listen to music, whatever it takes. And when you start to get groggy in the other room, no TVs, no iPads, drag yourself back into the bedroom and fall back to sleep. That's how you break that early morning arousal. Now, on the other hand, if a person is awakening frequently in the early morning hours and that little technique doesn't work, there may be a sleep disorder responsible. You might have sleep apnea. You might have periodic limb movement disorder. And you might be suffering from depression. And one of the most common symptoms of depression is early morning awakenings and then an inability to return to sleep.
Another issue that I think a lot of us face is the partner. The partner is snoring. The partner is thrashing
right
about in the bed. The partner is keeping me awake. I'm trying to sleep. What do we do there?
Yeah, we call that spousal arousal syndrome. And basically what we do is if it's snoring, we get a partner to see somebody about possibly taking care of that snoring. And if indeed the snoring is due to sleep apnea, we not only are helping our partner help us, we're also helping to save our partner's life. Then, of course, you can get earplugs. There are custom earplugs that adapt to your ear canal. There are eye shades you can buy. And in the end, a lot of people, when the partner is adamant and they can't do anything, there are people who are taking what are called bedroom divorces and sleep in another room. I mean, it's becoming more and more common. I tell my patients, before you blame your sleep on your partner, why don't you sleep in another room, if possible, for at least 2 or 3 nights? And if your sleep is much more peaceful, well, then at least you've got a good reason to try to either alter your partner's sleep habits or possibly, if it's destroying your sleep, sleep in another room periodically.
Yeah, I know that it kind of harkens back to the 50s when they had those twin beds. They couldn't have the big king-size bed and all of that. But it does work. You're absolutely right about that because with my schedule.
Cases, not in some cases. In most cases, your sleep is one of the most valuable health commodities you have. So you don't want to squander it because it will. Every study is showing that poor sleep and lack of sleep will catch up in terms of high blood pressure, heart disease, and early mortality.
And I'll throw this out there, and you can correct me if I'm on the wrong path here. I would think it's probably more healthy for a marriage to sleep in another room. You know, obviously there are times you're going to get together, but to sleep in another room, get your sleep, and wake up refreshed as opposed to wake up cranky and nasty and, you know, taking everything the wrong way. It's probably better to sleep in separate rooms than to deprive yourself of sleep and cause marital tensions that way. Would you agree?
No, I've had many patients who say it saved their marriage because the wife or the husband was becoming so irritable, so fatigued, and so angry, even though the bed partner really has no control over what the sounds they're emitting or the fact that they're restless sleepers, that yes, I've had patients who've done that. They've lived that way successfully. And obviously, they still get together for conjugal visits. But bottom line is they sleep better, they're happier, and their marriage survived.
That's Dr. Robert Rosenberg in conversation with Richard Neer, and his book is titled Sleep Soundly Every Day, Feel Fantastic Every Day, A Doctor's Guide to Solving Your Sleep Problems. It's published by Demos Health. Richard Neer returns for some final words as we approach the concluding segment of our program. When A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, continues in a moment.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only.
Carol Marx is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism in our society. Her fabulous new book, Modern Aging, A Guide for Seasoned Citizens to Achieve Health, Happiness, and Purpose, published by Talkers Books, is a major breakthrough in providing a maturing population with vital information and inspiration to live better and more productive lives. Carol Marx offers practical strategies for juggling work, romance, and navigating the healthcare system. She is a guide through the maze of grandparenting, technology, travel, and retirement, as well as facing the sandwich generation struggle of supporting adult children and elderly parents. Modern Aging by Carol Marx is available now at www.talkersbooks.com. That's www.talkersbooks.com.
She's conquered some of the most challenging ski courses anywhere, but with only one leg, the odds were against her even walking.
The growth was stunted in my right leg when I was born, and the doctors told my mother we needed to amputate when I was 5 years old.
Bonnie was helped at a Shriners Hospital, one of a network of 22 hospitals helping kids throughout North America. Shriners Hospitals provide world-class orthopedic and burn medical care, and they offer that care totally free of charge.
The care and treatment the Shriners gave me was a gift. It wasn't just about learning to walk. They helped me to believe in myself.
There's a Shriners Hospital helping kids from this area realize their dreams.
If I went back to the Shriners Hospital and talked to the nurses and doctors, I would say thank you. Thank you for making my dreams come true.
If you know a child they could help, call 1-800-237-5055. Shriners, giving help and hope to kids for over 80 years.
Engine.
Check.
Thrusters.
Check.
Fuel.
Check.
Computer.
Check.
Social Security.
No check, go direct.
That's right, Patty. A few weeks ago, I went online to GoDirect.org to sign up for direct deposit. It's easy to do, and I got my cash at warp speed.
Wow, it's fast and easy. I'll sign up right now to make sure I'm prepared for our next mission.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair. We come to the final segment of this hour of our broadcast, and we continue our conversation with our senior correspondent, Richard Neer. Now, Richard Neer is a very literary fellow. In addition to being a sportsman, he's a sports talk show host. He's a musicologist and a music culture expert, having spent years and years on some of the best music stations in America, WNEW-FM. And he is, of course, on this program as an interviewer, a generalist. He's an expert on issues of importance to upper demographics. I would say, Richard, you're a renaissance man. One of the things we talk about is your podjockey.com program, in which you talk exclusively to authors of novels. And people know who listen to this program that you happen to have a soft spot in your heart for thrillers, for whodunits, for detective mysteries. And now you've written one, and it's called Something of the Night. And this is one of these newfangled e-books. How does that work?
It's really something, because you can get a book published on Amazon. You figure out the price that you want to charge, and you have to format it, you have to write it, you have to really do all the promotional work yourself. But then you put the book out, and it stands right beside Lee Child, Robert Parker, all the big-time novelists. It looks just like their books, and hopefully it reads just like their books.
Well, you've certainly read enough of this particular genre. Look, we all know that you're a good writer. You're a columnist in Talkers Magazine for 25 years, writing about sports talk radio. You published a book in 2001 on a major imprint, Villard, FM, and I don't have it in front of me. The fall, was it the fall of rock radio?
The rise and fall.
The rise and fall of rock radio.
Yeah. And it did actually rise before it fell.
Yeah, and that
but you know what, Michael?
That was a bestseller.
The interesting thing about genre stuff is that it's already been done so many times before. You have to come up with a new approach to make it interesting, because otherwise people, by the 10th page, goes, oh, I know who did that. I know where this is going. I know what this conspiracy is all about. So you really have to think out of the box. And the reviews I've gotten have said, I achieve that, which is very flattering, because as you know, when you write a book, and you have written a lot, your wife is writing a book, you know that you just can't do the same old stuff, because people have said, yeah, been there, done that. They need something new, and it's difficult to do.
Well, it is difficult to do. Let's take 30 seconds to give the basic premise for people listening if they're interested in the thriller genre. Give us the basic 30-second trailer.
Well, there's this English teacher at a Catholic high school who's written a book, and it's very much Lolita-like. There's a three-way with a Catholic priest in the book.
Oh, no.
He submitted this book to an agent, and then he disappears. So the agent thinks, gee, maybe somebody at his school where he taught, maybe somebody bad wanted to get rid of him because this book was so scandalous.
Oh, my.
And she goes to the detective in the town, Riley King is the guy's name, to find the author, to see what's happened to him. And through his attempts to find the author, he uncovers an even bigger scandal, which could blow up the entire area.
Wow. How do you come up with something like that?
You know, and I did it without drugs either. I don't take drugs.
I know. There's no. It was more of a rhetorical question than.
Well, here's how I came up with it.
A good answer. Okay, quickly. How can people get this book? I know it's only $2.90, so it's worth it just for the curiosity factor. But you're getting all these 5-star reviews. How do people get the book?
You go to Amazon.com and you type in the search Richard Near something of the night, or Richard Near night, or Near night, any of those things, and you will find it. And you just click on it and you can download it, and it's in your Kindle or your tablet or your phone immediately.
Super. Thank you, Richard Near. Thank you, Mike Kanosian. Thank you, Steve Wiseman. Thank you, Beverly Santanella, all the folks on our team. Thank you, Carol Marks, the host of the program. And thank you for listening. I'm Michael Harrison, inviting you to join us next weekend right here for another 2-hour installment of A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups.